A very good morning to you, my dear listener. Very good morning to you, Namibia. And thanks for joining us. Wherever you are listening us from, welcome to Eagle FM. This is your number one talk radio station. And thanks for choosing Eagle FM. We love to be in your company. So we love being in your company. And thank you, Tate France, for keeping the seat warm. And so let me jump into it. Let me jump into the seat and let me see if I'm going to keep it warm as you just definitely did. So good morning, and welcome. Our time is about 5 minutes past the hour of 8. My name is Michael Chiavelli, and this is Unpacking the Day. This is Unpacking the Day, your daily dose of what is really going on in business, economic, and political news, political headlines. So every weekday, we cut through the noise to make sense of the big stories, trends, and numbers making headlines. So we keep it clear, sometimes, you know, a little witty and always curious, asking the questions that matter and giving you a fresh take on what people are saying out there. So the views shared during our segment don't necessarily reflect those of Eagle FM. We are here to unpack what others are saying and spark meaningful conversation so that you can be part of the bigger conversation. So this is your space. This is your platform to unpack the headlines with me and get to the heart of the stories. So, and if you're just joining us, now, welcome. So you're right at the beginning of the show. So, and as usual, we start in Africa. We start looking at what happened on this day in Africa. So, on the 30th of July, 2026. So, good morning and good afternoon and good evening wherever you are tuning in. From this beautiful continent of ours, you are listening to On This Day in Africa. And today, we're looking back at July the 30th. We're looking at back July the 30th. Let's take a walk through the moments. Let's take a walk through the moments that shape this continent. Let's take a walk through the moments that shape this continent. So, July 30th, 1877, the Kirigi War kicks off in what is now Nigeria. So, the Ekiti-Parapo Alliance has had enough of Ibadan's dominance, and they decided it's time to push back. So what followed is one of the longest civil war in Yoruba history. So 16 years of conflict that completely redraw the political map of southwestern Nigeria. So it was brutal, it was drawn out, and it changed the region forever. And let's fast forward to 1921. That's now in Cape Town. On this day, a group of activists and thinkers gather for the founding conference of the Communist Party of South Africa. Now, this was not just a meeting in some kind of a back room. No, the Communist Party of South Africa, would go on actually to become a major force in South Africa's labor movement and a long, hard fight against apartheid. So seeds planted on days like this, you know, take decades to grow, but grow they did, yeah. So, and in 1960, the year of Africa really keep rolling. Now, if you don't know, in 1960 was the year of Africa. 17 countries across the continent won their independence that year. 17, you know, in the same year. So the events of July in 1960 added even more fuel to the fire, you know, so speeding up the end of colonial rule, reshaping Africa's place in the world almost, you know, almost overnight. And in 1966, diamond was discovered in South Africa. So now here is a story that changed everything, you know. The word get out, you know, diamonds have been found. You know, suddenly thousands of prospectors, dreamers and investors are pouring in. So the economy of the region transforms, you know, the economy of the region transformed practically overnight. And South Africa's mining industry, one of the biggest in the world, actually, so start taking shape right then. So, and in July 30th of 1975, Angola was on the brink of independence, but Cold War politics are creeping in. On this day, the first shipment of American weapons is sent off to UNITA forces, routing through Zaire. It was a turning point. It's a turning point. Foreign powers are now getting directly involved in Angola's civil war, and the conflict is about to get a whole lot more complicated because of this. All right. And every year on the July 30th, it is a throne day in Morocco. So Morocco pauses to celebrate one of its most important national holidays. So throne day, like throne of the king. It marks the day King Mohammed IV came to power in 1999. Flags fly higher, celebrations fill the streets, and the nation reflect on its history and its future on this day. So, what does July 30th tell us? So, it's a reminder of how far this continent has come through conflict, through change, through struggle, and through celebration. So, that's it. That's it for today's edition on this day in Africa. Until next time, keep remembering history and keep the conversation going. All right, our time's 12 minutes past the hour of 8, and thanks for joining us. If you're just joining us, you are tuned in Unpacking the Day on Eagle FM. So, and what is our thought for the day today? Thursday, July the 30th. Does this month have a 31st? So we still have a day more, all right? We still have a day more. Our thought for the day comes from an African proverb that says, one cannot put out fire with fire. So you can't put out fire with fire. Think about that. So, when someone speaks to us with anger, our first reaction is to answer with more anger. You know, when we are hurt, we want to hurt back. When there's a conflict, we sometimes believe that the more conflict will solve it. So, but fire does not stop fire. It's only create a bigger blaze, you know? So the proverb reminds us that problems are rarely solved by adding more on the same problem. You know, anger needs calm, you know? Hate needs understanding. Conflict needs, you know, wisdom. So whether it is in our home, our workplace, our communities, or even in politics, you know, even in politics, so responding with more aggression often makes the situation worse. So, and real strength is not found in shouting the loudest. Real strength is found in knowing when to stay calm, you know, when to listen, and when to choose a better way, you know. So today, before you react, ask yourself, am I putting out the fire or am I adding fuel to it? Today, before you react, just ask yourself, am I putting out the fire or am I adding fuel to it? So that's our thought for the day, this morning, and a very good morning to you. If you're actually just joining us. So when we come back, we're looking at what we have ahead of us this morning. Stay tuned.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Omutiha utekirwa kaguna imatina omjo. Chikao shafa sana nana longe shifa ya ishiwike moshiwana. Iye moyao ota ingongo tisamwene. Anange shifa ya Namibia ombito ombwa na wa olonjika. Seisa nina omayakuro nirandi somwa yoe yonge shifa yoe okupikira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende pimeleha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimopo yomo programa detu. Moambo dengera selma konara hetatu imwe. Datu heari hamano tano o niari. Eagle FM, the eye.
Well, Morokeni, ngapione. Very good morning. Good morning to you. And thanks for joining us. Thanks for tuning in. Yeah, so today is Thursday, the 30th of July. One more day before we say goodbye to July. It's, the year? Ooh, the year just disappeared. Like this, you know, at one point you're just in January, next thing you're in July already. Actually in August, soon we will be, just a day we'll be in August already. So, it's really, the year goes very fast, especially when you're busy. You don't see the day, how the days just disappear like that. All right. So what is on our agenda this morning? Well, as always, we get a lot, to unpack. So there are so many things that are happening around. So many things to unpack. So Total Energy has been cleared to take over operationship of Namibia's two largest oil fields. They have been cleared to take over the operationship of Namibia's two largest oil field. Now that is positioning now this French multinationals as the primary architect of the country's emerging offshore petroleum industry. So, Total Energies takes the keys. Now, maybe the question we should be asking is, who really drives Namibia's oil future? If, you know, this French multinationals is now the primary architect of the country's emerging offshore, you know, petroleum industries. So that's the question we're asking. That's the question we are unpacking. Who really drives Namibia's oil's future? Okay? I hope you stay tuned to unpack that with me. And another thing that is really, I think that's an off-spin of what is happening in South Africa. Nigeria is intensifying pressure on South Africa to curb xenophobic violence by signaling that the safety of South African corporate investigation and interest, you know, in Nigeria is now directly tied to the protection of Nigerian nationals. So there were two, you know, the two government actually just met recently, I think on Monday, you know, to actually put off fire, as we talk about fire today. You don't put off fire with fire. To put off fire, so because Nigerians said, my dear, if you continue, you know, xenophobic violence, what we're going to do, we're going to put on fire on your corporate interests and corporate investment in our country. So, yeah, it's something that we're going to look at. Yeah, something we can unpack as well. So yesterday, I wanted us also to look at the civil society and some of the growing number of NPs are demanding that National Assembly extend its sitting hours so legislators can devote sufficient time to debate and also maybe to pass the laws that are stagnant in the parliament. So yeah, if we have time, we're going to look at that as well. So, and you know what? Your participation, as always, is part of this show. So make sure that you unpack with me and you come through and have your opinion, add your thoughts and your perspective on any topic that we are discussing. So, welcome. We come back after this.
Omudiha kutekirwa kaguna I madina omjo chikao shafa sana nana longe shifa ya ishiwike moshiwana iye moyao ota ingongoti samwene anange shifa ya Namibia ompitombwa na wa olonjika zeitha nina omayakuro nirandithoma yoe yonge shifa yoe okupitiramo Eagle FM Media House ngoe tuende pimemeha uo kakombanga nina kara omkwashi pareki uimepo yomo programa detu Moambo, dengera Selma, onora heta tuimu. Datundatu, heari jamano tano, oniaji. Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
All right. Who is really driving Namibia's oil's future? Good morning to you, Namibia. And you are tuned into Unpacking the Day on Eagle FM. And I'm your host, Big Mike. I'm host. All right. And talking about a host. I'm your host, actually. So, yeah. This is just information for you. So, yeah, I probably won't be your host for too long on Unpacking the Day. probably tomorrow will be my very last day. So it's coming as a shock. Yeah, so tomorrow will be my last day, actually, on Unpacking the Day. So I'll be around. I'm not going anywhere. But I'll be around. So Unpacking a Day, I think there will be some changes. It will be, you know, where you have now Kuthamosha from around 6, from 6 until 9, I think. So the changes will be that Unpacking the Day will move to that, to the morning time. And so you'll probably know how this changes will happen. But just to let you know that I will not be doing Unpacking the Day anymore. I will say my goodbye tomorrow. So don't worry. Okay? But just to let you know that there will be changes, you know, coming. All right. So yeah. You know what? I want us to talk about something, né? And this, I think it just happened quietly. It hasn't been spoken quite a lot. You know, something just happened quietly, almost very silent, you know. And probably this happened. This probably happened because we have been focusing on our worry about petrol prices and the cost of living. And it just quietly this happened. So here's the thing. A French multinational company just took control of two of the biggest oil discovery in our country history. You know, two license, you know, one operator. I think it crossed my mind. It's this when I read the stories, then I'm thinking, okay, isn't this similar to almost, you know, we're talking about construction industry when we're talking about cement, the Horongo and Chita, you know, being, you know, controlled by one company. So now we have our biggest oil discoveries in our country's history. You know, those are two licenses, but now they're going to be under one operator. And the number that matter, and the number is actually, I think the number is something that is really matter. You know, 350,000 barrels of oil every single day. So that's the amount. That's the headline here, you know. But as always, on this show, the headline is just the door, okay? The headline is just the door, and this morning we walk through that door. As usual, we walk through the door. Now, what happened? Okay, let's get to it. Total Energies, that, as you know, most of you know already, is one of the biggest, the big French oil company. One of the largest in the world, you know, so one of the largest in the world, had just been given the green light by our government, you know, to become the boss of two massive offshore oil projects at the same time. So one is called Venus, the other is called Mopane. And they both sit out in the deeper water of the Orange Basins of our southern coast. Okay, now Venus was already under Total Energies, okay, but Mopane belonged to a Portuguese company called Galp. So what happened is basically a swap, okay? Yeah, Total Energy said to Galp, all right, you give us the steering wheel on Mopane, and we will give you a piece of Venus and another piece of a third license called PEL 91. All right? Plus, Total Energies agreed to pay half of Galp's bill on Mopane's development, but Galp has to pay that money back later from the oil, you know, they produce once they start production. So, well, so much has been happening, you know, that discussion, so in terms of that. And in our competition commission, that's where we come in, our competition commission looked at this and said, no problem. We got no problem, you know. This won't hurt any competition in Namibia, of course, because there are no other oil companies in this field. So this won't hurt competition in Namibia. Well, it is fine. So our competition commission said yes, no problem, non te problem. Okay. So the Minister of Energy signed it off. Yeah, they also signed it off too. That okay, non te problem. Okay, go ahead. And just like that, as I said, quietly, without much public debate, One foreign company now controls the development of both of Namibia's crown jewel oil industries, that oil discoveries that we made. What do you think about that? Now, what do you think? One company, two license, 300. We come back.
Great news. Impact just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
All right, welcome back. Welcome back. So now, some of us are people that when you read, your mind goes to many things. You know, it's just meant to think so many things. Okay, and unpacking the day, now you kind of like, you know, your mind start questioning everything. So now when one foreign company now control, you know, the development of both of Namibia's oil discovery, and this is our crown jewel, if you like, of our oil discovery, you know, Venus and Mopane. So one company now, there are two licenses, because these are two different licenses, 330,000 barrel a day. That's a lot. So that's the plan at least. Okay? That's what has been agreed. So, now, let's put some numbers. There are two things that I always said, you know. Do you know how the two things, my two principles, when I'm looking at, you know, any analyzing of any stories, two things. Numbers don't lie. Look at numbers and follow the money. That's all what we do here. Okay? Look at the numbers and follow the money. Now, let me put some numbers on the tables so that we all understand what we are dealing with here. Okay? So that we understand, why are you making a big deal of this? Why are you focusing on this? Well, Venus on its own is estimated to hold about 750 million barrel of oil. 750 million barrel of oil. Mopane is even bigger, between 800 million and 1.1 billion barrels. And Total Energy say there could be another 1.5 billion barrel of potential in an additional prospect on the Mopane site alone, you know? So now, 350,000 barrels a day. If both projects now go ahead. So there's that, if both projects goes ahead. So we are at that stage now where we just, you know, studies and, you know, data, they're studying data, they're doing explorations, and you know, so we're still at that stage. So now, if both projects go ahead, that would actually put Namibia in the same league as some serious oil-producing countries. We become one of the, you know, serious, you know, oil-producing countries. Well, maybe not at the level of, not yet, okay? Not yet at the level of Nigeria and Angola. Probably not yet, because we're just newcomers. But we'll be on the map. Definitely we'll be on the map. You see, you know, sometimes I see when the CNN or BBC or Al Jazeera, when they're doing, the weather report, they never actually mentioned it. They mentioned big cities like big cities like Nairobi, you know, Abuja, Cape Town, you know, and even sometimes Lusaka. Sometimes they even mention Lusaka, and they don't mention Windhoek, you know. So maybe This is going to put us on the map as well in terms of, you know, meshing now Namibia's capital on a weather report. It just get me mad, you know. Why don't you mention Namibia? Why don't you mention Windhoek, you know? Yeah, so maybe that's going to put us on the map as well. So, as I said, we're going to be on the map. Definitely with that amount of barrels of fuel, we will be on the map. So, now, according to, so the, all right, so, as I said, yeah, that's amount of barrels of oil definitely going to put us on the map, and for a country that has never actually produced a single drop of commercial oil, I think this is massive. It's massive, and that's why you and I must pay attention. Yeah, must pay attention. Must know exactly what is going on. Every transaction, everything that is going on, we should be on it. Yeah. So we're talking about now. We want to get involved. We want to be part of. We're talking about local content. We want to be involved in this, in this emerging sector. But you're not even as we speak now. There are not even people who, you know, probably even when I'm bringing up this topic, some people are like, oh, it has to do with oil. But we're not even listening to understand what is going on. Eh? So, but we want to be involved. We want to be, you know, how do you involve in something that you don't even pay attention, something you don't follow? Eh? So we're bringing you this information to, you know, to update you where we are in terms with what is going on in that sector. Eh? And you're not paying attention. Eh? You're not paying attention at all. So, yeah, all you do. You do. I know you are actually paying attention. So, yeah. Now, according to research from the Institute for Public Policy Research, in this oil dream, you know, they're saying that if this oil dream becomes reality, our GDP could grow by close to 6% a year. You know, it could grow by close to 6% a year. Of course, driven largely by oil and gas. Okay? So now, the government's own development plan, our own development plan, talks about creating up to, you know, it talks about, so our own government's, you know, development plan talks about creating up to 22,800 jobs in the oil sector by 2030. Okay? So, this is another information for you, you know, that the possibility, so we're talking about possibility. So, but in that development plan, we're talking about creating 22,800 jobs in the oil sector by 2030. All right? So that would be up from just 2,800 today. Okay? According to information, that's the numbers of people that have been employed so far in that sector. So there's even a talk of Namibia achieving its first ever budget surplus. They're talking that, okay, you know, this will be the time when we will be having a surplus. We won't have deficit anymore, you know, trade deficit. Yeah, this will be the first time we're going to have budget surplus, you know. So, yeah, there's so much that is being spoken about. There's so much that's promises that are made. Sounding amazing. It's sounding amazing. But, you know what? I always tell you two things, as I said. I always tell you two things. We just look at the number. And now we just look at some numbers. Now what are we going to do? Let's follow the money. Okay? What if we follow the money, what does that tell us? Okay? Follow the mullah. Follow the money. Who owns what? Okay? Just a recap of this. This is the most, I I think this is the most interesting part, and where we need to pay attention. This is where we need to pay attention. Okay? So just to recap, understanding, I want you to understand who owns your oil. Okay? Who owns your oil? Yeah? So don't just go around and say, we rich. Okay, who owns it? Yeah? Okay? Who owns it? Now, on the EPEL, the PEL 83, and that's the Mopani license, here is the ownership breakdown after this deal. So now, after this deal, Total Energy get 40%. So after this deal, Total Energy get 40%. Galp keeps 40%. You know, both keep 40%. So that make, you know, the French company and the Portuguese company have the 80%. So our state oil company, then Namco, hold the 10%. Okay? And then another company called Kustos Energy, that is a private Namibian company. I think that's a company belonging to Mr. Knowledge Kati, I think. Yes, hold other 10%. Okay, hold other 10%. So, total, we get about 20%. Okay, the company, the government, you know, have got about 10%. I mean, Namco get 10%, and then another Kustos Energy got 10%. That's now the EPL, the PEL, no, not the EPL, the PEL 83. On PEL 56, that Venus license, where's my information? Venus license, okay. It's Total Energy, it's still Total Energy here, also you still have Total Energy at, you have total, if it is Total Energy at about 35%, okay, 35%, and then here you have Qatar Energy, that is the state oil company of Qatar, also at about 35%, and then here you also get Galp, that's a Portuguese one, Portuguese company, at 10%, and on a first, our Namco at 10%, and a company called Impact Oil and Gas at 9.5%. I'm not too sure whether Impact Oil and Gas is a Namibian company. All right? Okay, now, here is my first critical question for you here. Okay? Namco holds 10% in both licenses. So that's our national stake. Okay? That's our national stake. The Namibian people share. That's our share. So you remember what I asked earlier on, who actually owns our oil? So is 10% enough? I'm just throwing a question there. We know the whole question of, we don't want to go into the whole question of explorations, you know, you put money as well and what. But is 10% really? 10% is enough. So other countries have pushed for more. There are other countries that have pushed for more. But is 10% enough? Eh? There have been discussion in government circles, you know, about raising Namco's stake to 20 or even 30, even 30% in future projects. So is 10% enough? On what basis actually you would say it's 10% enough? Eh? I think it would depend on what we can afford. Maybe that's the right question. Is 10% all what he can afford? I think that's the right question. Okay? Is 10% all what we can afford? Can we not risk it a little bit? Because in business, you reward what you risk. Yeah? You reward what you risk. And you can lose also what you risk. The more you risk, the more you lose. But the more you risk, the more you gain as well. You know? So can't we risk it a little bit, especially when you have these big companies, you know, Total Energies, Galp, and all this. These are big companies. The assurance is there. Eh? Even if the final investment decision has been done, you know, the assurance is there, the interest is there. If they are willing to put in money and do what they do, then you know that there's something. Take a risk. Eh? Take a risk. So because when they produce, the production gonna come, if you have a little, you will get little. Eh? If you put in little, you will earn little in the end. For now, we can say let's not get into this. Okay, let's not risk much. Eh? But later on, you know, you may not have. Eh? Now, but here's the problem. Okay, here's the problem. So, a very good morning. Good morning. Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Yes, good morning, Mike. Big Mike.
Good morning, Uncle Bona. How are you?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm all right.
I like that point that you concluded, the last one.
Yeah.
The one we say, can't you also take some little risk?
Yeah, some little risk, you know? Yeah, add a little more, because when the production come, you know, we have much, we have more, you know?
So when I was listening to President Ramaphosa, the Namibia, South Africa, bilateral agreement or whatever they had, the summit they have recently. The one that was called by Namibia in South Africa.
Yeah.
And then they were saying, you take some well-calculated risk.
Exactly. One thing for sure, you can see that this big company, these are the biggest company in the world in this industry.
They can lose. The guarantee is there.
Yeah, so the guarantee is there. So it's nice also to say, okay, let's put in a little bit more, you know?
Yes, because honestly speaking, that's why they can say they are talking about you can then use this strategy,
yeah.
This triple P, and you know very well that yes,
yeah,
I'm not going to lose, and this one is, and there's no way if that is the case, like you say, let's take some little kind of risk, because there's nothing that doesn't. Everywhere you go, there are uncertainty. But some of this uncertainty, you know, really just taken care of.
Yeah.
So I think it is just very important also to take some well-calculated risk.
Exactly.
And it's nothing, because whether you are taking risk because of the money that you have, or because of the skill and the knowledge that the expertise that you are bringing, so it's worth it.
It's worth it.
So it's worth it, because you it's guaranteed already that there's no way you can lose.
Especially when they tell you how much, you know, how much barrel deposit are there. You know, they are telling you this is how much that is there. And you hear all this, you can say, okay, you know, maybe let me take a little bit of a not. Too much risk, but let me take a bit of risk so that I earn more, you know, when the produce come, when the production start to happen, you know.
So now we are talking about especially the private ones.
Yeah.
The private ones, and because you can also get the guarantee from the government, like we said, public-private partnership.
Exactly.
So if people really organize and mobilize for this go to the financial market and mobilize for the resources, and people really organize themselves. That's why I'm also saying, so yesterday we were listening to Helmut and Dwight.
Dwight, yeah.
And they brought some young ones who went to China, and it was so very much interesting, you know.
Yeah.
You can see that there are a lot of, and all of them, I think there are a lot of opportunities here.
Yeah.
So if people can really take some risk, and they really invest their energies and the little resources they have. Because we know we don't have, but we have some kind of security that are there.
Exactly.
That we can rely on, and then we invest our money and energy on those things.
Yeah.
So thank you very much, Mike, for the opportunity.
All right. Thanks for coming through. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. As I said, other countries have pushed for more. You know, other countries have pushed for more, and why can't we push for more? You know. Yeah, it's something also being discussed. There's a little bit of, there have been discussion in a government circles, you know, about raising NAMCO stakes. You know, let's raise NAMCO stake, to 20 or, you know, or even 30. Okay, let's push it up. You know, let's put the percentage, you know, a bit, you know, for future present. So now when we're talking about future projects, you know, these are the projects, you know. So we can't wait until there's nothing anymore. So here's the problem. This is the problem. A bigger stake means we have to put up more money, right? So I'm saying if we can put some extra money that would guarantee us a better earning, I think let's do that. And we all know the state. The thing is that we all know the state of our budget, the state of our national budget. So we are stuck, you know. So we are stuck in this position where we want big slice. I think this is where we are stuck. We want a big slice. I think so. I think the government want a big slice, but we can't afford to pay for the bigger plate. We just can't afford to pay for the bigger plate. Given our national budget. So, maybe what Uncle Pona is talking about, private partnership, the PPPP. So, a public-private partnership, maybe how do we can use that model, you know, to invest more in something that we know it's gonna, let's invest in the future, because that's about investing in the future. Okay? So it's like you're saving. It's like you're saving, you know, for the future. Now, and then there's Kustos Energy, the Kustos Energy, that 10% of PEL, you know, 83. That's not government, okay? That's not government. That's a private company, as I said, owned by Namibian businessman named Knowledge Kati. So good morning.
Morning, how are you, Michael?
I'm fine, and yourself?
I'm good. Listening to you. I'm listening to your program.
All right. Are you?
Yeah.
Do you have interest in oil?
Yeah, I think everybody in Namibia has got interest in oil.
So, and
you know for sure that the other countries who have got oil, they are richer.
Yeah, so most of us just get excited and we have no clue what is going on, you know?
Yeah.
We all know that we just discovered oil, but we don't even know who owns what, you know?
I was listening when you were trying to break down the percentages of these totals and other companies.
Yeah.
And what is being owned by our NAMCO. You were talking about taking risk.
Yeah.
Do you have money?
That's the thing. I was just saying that now the problem, I just mentioned that the problem, our national budget, it's very squeezed, it's very stressed.
And if we don't have surplus, it's like we are working on the expected budget each and every year. And you know, having that expected budget at the end of the year, at the end of the financial year, you don't have surplus.
Can we not be in this in the way where we said, okay, let's suffer a little bit. If you have a really proper plan, you know, you can say, I'm suffering now for the future. In 5 years' time, you know, we will be better off. So at the moment, we're only thinking our stomach now. We're only thinking our belly at this point in time.
But Michael, for us to do that, it means that maybe we have to stop the payment of the salary of workers.
Yeah.
We have to stop some of our investments in infrastructure like roads and other things, you know. For us of safety, in a certain country, or maybe in a certain commercial bank, or maybe in our national bank.
Yeah.
And now we are having plus or minus 50 billion for the past 10 years.
Yeah.
Mm. But now if we receive the report, I think that last year, that the Namibian government is even broke with no money.
Yeah.
That report was there.
Yeah.
That there's no money. Now, if there is no money, why do you expect the Indian government now to take the risk of?
Yeah.
Otherwise, indeed, it is a very good idea of taking risk. But now the problem which they that last time I was talking, I think I was on the very same platform. I don't know if you go to these Western countries, there are certain trades or there are certain courses.
Yeah.
Which they cannot offer to Africa. Like these oil explorations and many other things. You know, here in Namibia, I don't think that we have any Namibian government, any Namibian company which is involved in oil exploration.
Yeah, no, okay, I don't know, but part of this whole PEL that we have one company that, Kustos, what is energy? You know, that's actually owned by our Namibian businessman, Knowledge Kati. Of course, he's part of that. He has 10% of it, so they're involved. They're part of, Well, of course, I understand what you're saying. We have a stake, but we may not actually have the means to do much anyway. If you 10%, what do you do? Yeah.
And now, if it only 10%, and is it good that company? Is it good that it can do all exploration on its own?
Definitely not. This is a new industry. We don't have. First of all, we don't have the expert. We don't have the know-how, and we don't have the people. You know, we don't have the machinery. There's so much that we don't. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So the other solution is to rely on private company.
Yeah, definitely. That's why they own the majority. That's why they own the majority, yeah.
Yes, so there's no way that we can change this. There's no way because we don't have money. We don't have, you see, even now, some people that they don't have money.
Yeah.
You feel like that we are still even selling, you know, to de-link our million dollars to something like that.
Do you know what would my strategy would be?
Yes.
Okay. So this is my stupid strategy of someone who is not an economist. You know, it would be like I would have actually company that I would pay to do exploration like that they do. And once I found out, they would do through the process to the next stage. Okay. Once I found out for sure the amount of deposit of oil that is in there, and how to get out, and then I will decide now, okay, this is the time now. I will now send my people to go and study, send them to go and study to these big companies or whatever country where they are doing mining, oil mining already. And then I would also, for years, I said, stay, I'm not going to do production yet, but I have to have my people study, I have to have the equipment. So, and then that will take me 5 years or 6 years or 10, it doesn't matter. So when, and then, And then I would have fewer people now coming from this company to come and help me, not them actually doing the work.
Michael, oil exploration is not something that you can spend maybe 100 million on to that one.
No, I'm talking billions.
It's billions.
Yeah.
For you to hire a foreign company to come and do it on your behalf when you pay that company, it's not an impact that one can perform.
Yeah.
That a government can perform. It's very, 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 very expensive. It's very, very much expensive.
And the other thing is that if you wait for 5 to 10 years, by the time you start producing the oil, people have transitioned to green energy.
That's the thing.
Then your fossil oil it's worth nothing.
I don't think that the oil completely nothing will be abandoned completely.
Yeah.
Because for us we still need to make some tarot.
Mm.
And for us to make tarot we need the oil.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, we needed the tar from the oil. So that industry will not be closed completely.
Yeah.
There are certain machineries which cannot operate on electricity, which still need oil.
Mm.
Yeah, like even the ships also, or maybe these, how do you call them? The ships that are transporting the goods also, they also use oil also.
Yeah.
Into their engine also for the transportation.
Yeah, airplanes, ships, and all that. Yeah,
airplanes, ships, and also that. So it will not be closed. All of a sudden, that industry, it's an industry which is still there. Maybe our generation will go in maybe the 9 generation or 10 generation after us. Maybe they're the one who are going to be successful.
But things change. Things change fast, man. We're talking about diamond, natural diamond. Now we have lab diamond. You see how things change very, very, very quickly, you know?
Yeah. I'm not sure Chinese are now having their own artificial made diamond.
Yeah.
Which they're not producing, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a problem.
All right, man.
Thank you, Mike. I'll be listening.
Okay, thanks for coming through, yeah.
Mm. This is Morgan from Ngoma.
Okay, good to hear, yeah.
Yes, Katima in the Ndambezi region, yeah.
Okay, great, yeah.
All right, thank you.
Yep, I've been saying that Katima, for some reasons, we haven't been having you coming through. Thanks for coming through, yeah. Yeah, now... I talked about this Custos Energy, the Custos Energy, that 10% of PEL, 83, and that's not the government, so that's a private company, as I said, owned by the Namibian businessman, Knowledge Cut. Let's look at the Knowledge Cut question, okay? So because the man's story is actually important to understand. I think we need to understand, you know, Knowledge Kati a little bit. Knowledge Kati is one of the first Namibian to get into the offshore oil game. You know, he started out as an auditor at PwC, auditing big company like Rossing Uranium. And what he saw. And as I think what he saw that bothered him, you know, Namibia Resources were making money, but most of it was going to the foreign shareholders, not Namibians. So he made it his mission to get Namibians ownership stakes in our own resources. That's information from Energy Chamber. So he went offshore in the mid-2000s, studied the Kudu gas field, pitched a vision to the Ministry of Mines and Energy, and got a license. So he listed a company on the Toronto Stock Exchange. That's in Canada. He pushed for, and here's the one. He's one who has, from the stories, he's the one who pushed for NAMCO to hold equity in projects. You know, So over the years, his dealings helped, his dealings also helped open the door now for the companies like Shell, Total Energies, Chevron, you know, and Galp, the Portuguese ones, you know, to come into Namibia. So it plays a major role in some of these dealings. So now, this is unpacking the day, of course. So on one hand, you could say this man helped put Namibia on the global oil map. Yeah, so because of all of that, of what he has done. And on the other hand, so on the other hand, this is the question now I want you to think about, okay? Now, when one individual holds a 10% stake in a project with a project really worth billions of dollars, and that same individual has been at the center of almost every major deals that brought these foreign companies in, shouldn't we be asking question about transparency? Eh? No, this is not an accusation, all right? I'm analyzing. This is not an accusation. I'm just analyzing. So this is a question. So it's just a question. Because, well, in the oil business, like the previous caller said, in the oil business, you know, questions are cheaper than regret. You know, questions are cheaper than regret because, you know, if you don't question things now and the deal goes ahead, you'll regret. So you will regret. Now, let's look at something that should make us a little bit uncomfortable. Okay? Now, while this Total Energy deal was being approved, okay, there has been a bigger conversation happening in the background. So, yeah, so we do some digging as well, okay? So now, so that conversation, I think that's a conversation that should worry every Namibian who cares about where our oil money goes, okay? Because look at our Petroleum Act, the law that governs all of this. It dates back to 1991. It's old. It's very old. You know, back at 1991, just immediately after independence. You know, so it was written before anyone imagined we would have deep water oil discovery worth billions. Okay? So you can just imagine that it doesn't really cover adequately some of the issues that are emerging today. And the government has been trying to update it. But here's what is the controversial, and you remember this is something that has been discussed. Just it was a national conversation in the parliament, in the country, you know. So the proposed amendment, some of the proposed amendment, would move now control of the upstream petroleum sector, that is the exploration and production side, directly under the office of the president. So you remember that. So. And then President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah actually already moved the management of the upstream sector under her office before the amendment were even passed by the parliament. So that move was criticized. It was criticized across political spectrum. It was criticized by SWAPO members. It was criticized by opposite parties, you know, opposition parties, and by the private sectors as well. So, and here's the part that you should pay attention. I think this is the part you should pay attention. One article in the proposed law in the proposed law would actually give the president a total discretion to waive royalties. Okay, a total discretion to waive royalty payment on the oil exports. Now, royalties, as we know, that's the money the oil companies pay us for taking our oil. So, now, the fear is that this kind of power, okay? So the fear is that this kind of power, without strong check and balances, because at the moment we don't have strong policy and institution in place. So now the fear is that, so this kind of power, without that check and balances, strong check and balances, could actually open door to corruption at the highest level. So that's the fear. Okay? So that's the deal. But there's an argument. There's an argument to this kind of power. Okay? There's an argument for this kind of power. So the argument for this centralization, just hear me out first. Okay? I know the phone is buzzing. So the argument for the centralization is that it could actually speed up. There's an argument to that, that it could speed up decision making. It would reduce, you know, bureaucracy, and it makes things easier for investors. So that's the argument, and there's logic to that. Yeah? There's logic to that, and when you have got billions of dollars on the table, well, investors want clarity and definitely speed. Good morning. Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Yes, Mike.
Good morning.
Sorry, there's something that we did not touch, me and you, on our points.
Just a quick one.
Very, very important.
Okay, just
so,
yeah.
So, well, yes, it's not that we do not have money.
Yeah.
No, the money we have. Cathy that you mentioned about. So during the Easter day, I was also there. We were together.
Yeah.
And they were doing different professions. And we can use him as a model of entrepreneur and things like that.
Yeah.
So we can also mobilize money. You know, in South Africa, when those trade unions and all these other entities, what they are saying now is that, yes, let's be using money from the state and the GIPF, in our own case, the GIPF, patient funds. And that money should be channeled. They use it, just like the government use it or any other person use it.
Yeah.
So you can have access to that one, provided you are giving, you know, your business plan, you have so how many people are going to employ, what type of benefit are you going to get, the loyalty to the government, and all this, whether it's in the social or economic or whatever kind of economic activity that you have.
Yeah.
So it is for them to do that. And the same apply to the individual. The same apply to the individual. The individual are not included. If they can organize themselves and put their mind together,
yeah,
what's good chance to get to get that man?
Mm.
So thank you very much. Let them take risk, and the grandees already there, as you said.
Yeah.
Mm. Good.
All right. Yeah. So, yeah. So I'm just making a point. That's a very important point to understand, because that has been actually been discussed. As I said, the fear that kind of power to the president without strong check and balances. So the fear was that, okay, the discussion has been around where that could open the door to corruption at the highest level. But I said, well, there is also an argument for that kind of power from the other side, that the argument for centralization is that it could speed up decision making. Okay, it could speed up. It's arguable. You know, you can argue. You know, you can, debate about that. So it can could speed up decision making. It could speed up. It could reduce bureaucracy, and make things easier for investors. That's the argument. And I said, there's a logic to that. Right? There's a little bit of logic to that. And I said, when you think of the money that are pouring in, and given the understanding, I think, from the president's side is that given what happened to other countries, so let me have control of that. So investor probably want that kind of clarity and speed. You understand? But there's a counter argument. there's also a counter argument, and it's a strong one. Okay, it's a strong one. When you concentrate that much power in one office with weak transparency rules and limited independence oversight, you are not just making things efficient. You are also making it easier for bad decision to be made, well, in the dark. So in oil business, if you read around in the oil business, bad decision in the dark don't just cost money, they cost generations. They cost us, So the ISS, this is a respected African security think tank, they put it plainly, they put it clearly. When proper institutional check and balances are missing, concentrated decision making in an executive branch can quickly become the ground of governmental misconduct. So that's the fear. Okay? So while we are at that, talking about, transparency, while we are at that, now, as we speak, all upstream record, the data about what is happening out there in our waters, because when we hear stories like this, you're now looking up for this information, have been removed from public access since last year. So even if you wanted to check whether things are being done properly, you can't. The information is not available. So what do you think about that? Now, and there is a concept, ne? There is a concept in oil industries. There is a concept in an oil industry, the Namibian, and this concept as Namibian, we must be familiar with it, because sooner or later we will start actually producing oil. Okay, so it's a concept that we must be really, really familiar with. And of course, most of you have heard this concept. This is a term economists use called the resource curse. Eh? The resource curse. It sounds like the first time I hear that, it sounds like a contradiction. How can a resource be a curse? Eh? But the evidence is real. The evidence is real, and it's also devastating when you look at what happened in some countries. Well, across Africa and the world, not only Africa, most of the time we talk about Africa, but this is happening elsewhere as well. But, countries that discovered oil often ended up poorer. So instead of actually the country becoming rich, well, probably when it comes to GDP and all that, it looks as if the country is doing very well. But people, there are no tangible evidence that it has improved people's life. So countries that actually discovered oil often ended up poorer, more corrupt, and more unequal than before. So we have Nigeria. Well, we're just on our north here, on our northern neighbor. We have Angola. We have countries like Equatorial Guinea. So the list actually is long and very painful as well, So, and the pattern, there's always this pattern. There's always a pattern. The pattern is always the same. Oil money flows in. The currency gets stronger because of the oil. Other industry now, because of that, other industries suffer. So, and we have a tendency of just focusing on one sector. Like we have been, we just have focusing on oil, on minerals. That has been our, that's what our economy depend. Our GDP depend on that. So sooner we will then move, you know, to oil. So that happens sometime. That's the pattern I'm talking about. What normally happens is that the oil money flows in, the currency gets stronger, and other industry actually suffer because we become more dependent on that. Well, then you have a small elite, you know, that captures the wealth. Small elite that captures the wealth, and ordinary people see absolutely nothing. Okay? See nothing at all. So the job promise never materialized, infrastructure promise never get built, and when the oil runs out, because at one point it's going to run out, the country is actually left worse than it started. Yeah? So that's what when they're talking about this concept of, you know, resource curse. So now, Namibia have some advantages. We have some advantages. We have, of course, there are things that we can be really proud of, and we think that, you know, maybe we are better off than other countries that started ahead of us. So we have, for example, we have a stable democracy. It's not like in some countries where they have, well, I hope that we don't start fighting because of that war, because of that resources. So other countries started fighting, especially when you come in the regions where there is this, when these resources are. You understand? So hopefully not. So we have a stable democracy, and we hope it stays that way. So we have a strong institution, reluctant to say that. At least we used to. So at least we used to, all right? And we have like free press, you know, in this country. We have free press. We have civil society that ask questions, or that used to. They are also becoming weak now, you know. So that we have some, you know, something that's a little bit different than maybe other countries that have that came before us in terms of oil production. So, and the government has expressed interest in joining extractive industries. How do you call that? Extractive, the EITI. It's called EITI, Extractive Industry Transparency Initiative. Yeah. So we have, we have expressed interest. Actually, that was actually expressed by during the former, may his soul rest in peace, former president, Ken Gop. It was we, during the time is when we expressed that interest of joining the extractive industry, why do I always forget it, transparency initiatives. So, and that's actually a global body that pushes country to disclose, you know, disclose your oil contract, disclose your revenues that are coming from the oil production, and who actually own what. So, which we now reluctant actually to do. I don't know why. Okay? Or hesitant to join. So, yeah. So hopefully we do that so that actually the public know where, what are the contracts. And that's what we're trying to do here. When we hear a story, we follow up, we go and look who owns what, and just for you to understand, have a better understanding of what is going on. We don't have all the information, but the one we have, we bring it to you, so that you are actually familiar where are we, and who owns what? What are the contracts that, like as we're talking, those at the beginning, those swaps that are done, you know, by companies. So, yeah, that's what we want, transparency. And if we join the Extractive Industries Transparent Initiative, we'll be able to, you know, this information will be out there in the public. Yeah? Transparency. So it will be there out in the public. So we express interest, as I said, during the time of late President Hage Geingob. But expressing interest is expressing interest and actually joining are two different things. So those are two different. Transparency framework in our extractive sector actually remain, and in the world of researcher, it's still undeveloped. So they still say that is underdeveloped. So, yeah. And here's my question. Here's my question to you, you know. So when you're looking at this, maybe let's put it in a more puzzle kind of for you to think. So do you think, are we building, you know, are we building institutions and systems and whatever before this is actually, do you think we are ready? Let me ask you, let me put it very plain and simple. Do you think we are ready? Let's say, for example, if we say if a final decision is made, the final investment decision is made, and we started actually producing, do we even have, you know, are we ready? Are we building the walls before the flood comes? Or are we waiting until the water is at our doorstep? What do you think? Where are we? All right? So maybe there are those who are that so much in the sectors, and they see that, well, there are movement. Of course, there are here and there. There was even a youth. It was even in Swakopmund, Wavish Bay, that took place this week. Yeah, was it this week or last week? Okay, so I'm getting old. Okay, if I forget, please forgive me. Yeah, there was a youth in oil and gas. I think a conference or something in at the coast. So, of course, there are movement, okay? But are we talking, and what I'm talking is investment. As I'm talking about infrastructure and investment into, let's say, for example, people, so that we will be ready. So but when we talk about local content, we will be in a position where we can be able to provide, you know, services and supplies, what this sector need, you understand? So, but I'm not too sure that we are really in the position where we can say if we start producing in the next 2 years, we are ready, we have everything ready. All right, okay. It's a local content that I'm talking about. So maybe let's talk about that. Let's talk about jobs, because that's what every Namibian wants to know. Yeah? That's what you want to know, isn't it? You want to know about job, okay? I don't care about anything else. You must care, all right? Now, the government, okay, let me go to the market and then come back.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store.
Imbaya rire ombwa nai etepaweza ko ombunikiro ombe ombihukusha onjiviro yoye irire ombupu ohakane na wina ikare no masa kumurungu wa indu. Warire ongere kusha umune ondengu okura kwe imba. Una ovyu media peke ko gondola mirongo vitatu na hambu umwe mumwesto. Twika ovinki no kukara norupa ondando ya peke yukianja oshimariva. Owa peresente dano kumyeze vitatu moshimariva. Owa peresente omurongo kumyeze hambu umwe moshimariva. Owa peresente omirongo ivari na dano neve mulongwa na bivari moshimarifu. Itororera ondengu jima yu ungura na wakove na wina onyanu kife. Ashiesho imba yekupe oshimariva shishihina omaruhiro. Imba o maoronga neno uyebu haka enina itako na wina rishangita jinoni.
Omutiha kutekirwa kaguna i Madina Omjo. Chikao shafasa na nana longe shifa ya ishiwike moshiwana. Iye moyao ota ingongoti samwene. Anange shifa ya Namibia ombitombwa na wa oronjika. Seitha nina omayaguro nirandithoma yoe yonge shifa yoe okupikiramo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwa shipareki uimopo yomo programa detu. Moambo, dengera selma, konoraje tatu imu. Datu ndatu, heari jamano tano, oniaji. Eagle FM, the eye.
That's right, this is Eagle FM, and if you're just joining us, our time is 31 minutes past the hour of 9, and this is Unpacking the Day. We go up to 11 o'clock, we have plenty of time, and you're most welcome to, you know, to come through as well, depending on what we're talking about, and you know, if you something struck you, and you want to react, or you have more information, or you want to just contribute, or you just want to rant and complain, or you know, or praise, yeah, you're welcome. This is the place. This is the platform. You're welcome to do that. All right. So I was saying, let's talk about the jobs, okay? Because I believe that's all what we want to know. We want to know. We want jobs. It's job that we want. All right? So the government plan, if you look at the government plan, it talks about tens of thousands of jobs, okay? That's the promise that we see. There's a new local content policy being consulted on right now as we speak, okay? So the idea is to make sure that now when this oil company come in, they hire Namibians, and that's what I asked you earlier on, that are we building the wall before the flood comes, okay? Or are we waiting until the water is on our doorstep? So are we ready? So because as I said, the idea is to make sure that when these oil companies now comes in, they hire Namibian. They buy from Namibian suppliers. They train Namibian engineers and technicians. You know, that's the idea. So, but you know what? Let's also face the truth. Sometimes we, you know, you don't put your head in the sand and ignore the truth, okay? You just don't put your head in the sand and kind of like ignore the truth. The truth is, deep water oil development is some of the most technically complex engineering on the planet, okay? So we don't have the deep water oil industry in Namibia. We didn't have it. Eh? It's just starting now. So we don't have the trained workforce. So we don't have the supply chain. Eh? Well, not yet. So that's where now we're asking, you know, are we doing enough really to make sure that we are ready? So Total Energy says it wants to build what it calls a multi FPSO hub. You know, FPSO, you know, center or something. Now, what that is, that they want to do that in Namibia. Now, what that stands for is for floating production, storage, and offloading vessel. So that's what they want to do in Namibia. And think of it as a floating oil factory, a floating on the sea, a floating oil factory that sit out in the ocean. Could be dangerous. Spillover of those could really damage our sea. Yeah. So it's kind of like a factory that sits actually in the ocean. They process the oil, you know, they process the oil, store it, and loads it off to loads it off then on tankers. So that's what they do. That's what they want to do. So they want multiply of this operating of our cost. So the promise is long-term value for Namibia. But the question is, how many of the people working on those vessels will be Namibians? If we are not ready. If you are not, how many will be Namibian? So how many of the supplier will come from Namibian companies? So we can talk all about local content and all that, but now we may not be ready. And how many of the engineers will be trained at our institution, for that matter, to our institution, the UNAM and the NAST and the IUM of this world, do they have the capacity? Do they have the know-how? Can they train engineer in that sector? Our institution, is it capable? Or do we need to send people outside? And how many have we sent so far? Are we ready? So that's the question. I think those are things that we need to look at. And because it really, if the answer is no, if the answer is not many, what we have is a situation where foreign companies extract our oil, employ foreign workers, use foreign suppliers, and leave us with a royalty check. Of course, we're going to get the royalty check. And probably a cleanup bill, you know? So that's what you're going to deliver us with. A royalty check and a cleanup bill. All right? There you go. There you go, Namibia. So that's one thing that we need. And then what we do, we're going to be sitting and complaining. Hey, these are not, Namibians are not considered and whatever. Are you qualified? Have you prepared yourself already? At least let's do certain things. So if we can't invest, if we can't risk a little bit in terms of the share, let's then prepare ourselves for local content. Let's then prepare ourselves for local content. Come on. All right. So, yeah, let me ask a few questions. I'm going to ask, you know, as a Namibian, what are we demanding from this process? Now I'm asking you as an ordinary person. Okay? Now, is it healthy? Now, from what all we have discussed, we're talking about now Total Energy actually taking over, you know, this two license operations now. And is it healthy for one foreign company now to control both of our biggest oil discovery? I'm just asking, think about it, okay? The Competition Commission says yes. I do agree. I know that the commission says yes, but should we be comfortable with that? Should we be comfortable with that much concentration of power in one operator's hand? I think that's where I have a problem. If I have a problem of Chinese company taking over the cement, you know, industry, I have an issue here as well. It's the same thing, isn't it? So maybe you're looking at it in terms of, oh, but there are no other competition in terms of that industry. But this is our biggest oil discoveries. And, you know, it's in the hands of one operator. Okay. What do you think? So what do you think? I'm just questioning things that, you know, possibly you are questioning too. Or I'm pushing you in a direction where you need to think about this. So Now, we talked about, you know, we often talk about this. I'm just throwing some question out for you to think, if you want to come through. Just maybe rounding it off in a way. Is 10% enough for Namibian people through NAMCO? Okay, we talked about that, so I'm just running off now, asking you to think. Or are we selling our birthright? Because this is our birthright. For a fraction of its worth. Is it really worth 10% for us? Okay, we may not even, okay, it's not about what we put in. Maybe it's just how we negotiate. Eh? Maybe just how we negotiate. 10% sounds very little. All right? And maybe it hasn't got with how much we're putting in. Maybe it has to do with also how we negotiate. So, and when a private Namibian company like Kustosh Energy hold the same 10% as our entire national oil company, what does that say about who really benefit from our resources? Just think about it. Just think about it. Now, we also talked about the president having power to waive royalty payments without parliamental oversight, because that's what the new legislative would actually, you know, ask. Should the president have that power, the power to waive royalty payment without parliamentary oversight? Is that efficiency or is that a loaded gun? You know, a loaded gun? A loaded gun pointed at our national wealth. Eh? You can imagine what would that happen. So, and the other thing is, I was asking if we are prepared. Are we prepared? Our young people, are they prepared? Now, and when I'm talking about our young people, I'm talking about the ones in Katutura, the ones in Oshakati, the ones in Rundu, the ones in Kietmanzop. Not the children of who? Eh? Eh? We might talking just, okay, no, we prepared, but who are those prepared? Maybe the one we prepared are just for those, you know, for the elite ones, are the children of the elite that we're talking about. But I'm talking about the ones in Katutura, the ones in, you know, in Kayoko, Kayo Kalkfeld, yeah? The one in Ompuncha. Are we preparing our young people for the job this industry will create? Or are we going to, we can go and we might be watch foreigners fill those positions while our graduates sitting at home. Eh? Yeah. Yeah. That's a big possibility. So, and when now the first oil flows in 2030, but because the other thing is that the final decision, some of them are pushed to now to 2028. Yeah, so let's say that's the thinking, that by 2030 the first oil, you know, starts to flow. So will it flow into the pocket of ordinary Namibians, as we have seen? We know who owns what. Or will it flow? Will it follow the same tragic path it has followed across our continent? So when you look at our continent, there is always that path. So, all right. Let's quickly go to some commercial again, and then so we're going to come back after this.
This winter, Washempamo is turning your shopping into winning. Spend 200 Namibian dollars or more at any shop in Washempamo and you could win a 500 Namibian dollars shopping voucher every Friday. The more you shop, the more chances you have to win. Don't miss out. Visit Washempamo in Ondangwa from 3rd to 31st July 2026. Shop, enter your till slip with your name and number into the competition box located in the mall and stand a chance to win a shopping voucher from Washempamo. Don't miss our lucky winner live draw on Eagle FM every Friday from 1500 hours.
Well, the drawing board is just right here. I can see the drawing board. Make sure that you get to Washempamo, for you. It could be you. It could be you. All right. Okay, guys. Let's wrap this up. I'm not here really telling you that this deal is good or bad, the one we're talking about now. The truth is, it is both. In my eye, that's what I'm thinking. It's an opportunity that could transform this country. We could see changes, road being built, schools, hospitals, jobs, a future where our children don't have to leave Namibia to find work. That's real, and that's a possibility, a big one, okay? That is a possibility, and it's a big one. Possibility is not the same as certainty, okay? You understand? It's not certain at this point. So in the oil business, promises often sound big, and it's always made sound big. You have to understand who are actually making noise, not necessarily Namibian, but even companies, they're making this noise, for their own interest, okay? So they would promise how many jobs, exaggerate or something. It's an estimate. Remember, those are estimates. Anything could always happen in between. You may have COVID again and the whole thing goes off. It's a reality. There could be any disruption anywhere, And anything can happen in, not only in Namibia, anything can happen somewhere in the world. And then that changes the whole thing. So it's, as I said, possibility is not the same as certainty. And promises, so in this sector, always sound big. But the result, in many cases, do not always match, Do not always match. And that has hurt many, many resource-rich countries. So, Total Energy is a serious company. Those are a very serious company. They are, Galp is a serious company. The technology is serious. The oil is also sound very real and serious. So the money, it looks like it sounds real as well and serious and possible. So, but the other thing, so is the risk as well. So the risk is also real. We haven't even talked about environmental, assessment and all that, and protection and all that. So the only thing that stands between opportunity and disaster is governance. Governance. Strong, transparent, accountable governance with the public interest at its center. That's the only thing that stands between opportunity and disaster. Okay? So is this going to be opportunity or is this going to be a disaster? Disaster doesn't necessarily mean that, there will be, oil spillage or whatever. Could be that, only few that benefited from that. Yeah? So that's the only thing that stands in between that. So stand between opportunity and disaster is governance. For me, it's governance, strong, transparent, accountable governance. And then it should be in the interest of public interest, should be in the public interest. So, and we need to pay attention. That's why we bring things like that. We need to pay attention. We need to be asking questions. Okay? So, to keep your leader on toes, ask questions, pay attention, learn, understand, you know? We need to be demanding answers. So, because this oil belongs to us all. It does belong to all of us. Well, much of us is not ours, given all those percentage, you know. So, but it belongs to us, okay? For the 10% that we have, that's ours, okay? Let's fight for that 10% that we have. So, and the thing is this, once it's gone, it's gone. So let's really be accountable ourselves. Let's be accountable to. Let's not be complacent, okay, on this. That's unpacking the day. And I'm your host, Michael Chevalier on Eagle FM. And if you have a thought, if you disagree, if you have a perspective, well, maybe a perspective I didn't cover, or news that, you know, you found, you know, from your point of view, from where you are, or maybe you would be in the position that maybe you are in the oil industry and you see the progress that is going on. Yeah, this is the show where we want to hear from you. This is the show where we want to hear from you. 08-333-66-091. 08-333-66-091. We're waiting for you.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Well, that's right. 53 minutes is your time. 53 minutes past the hour of 9 is your time. And we still have about an hour and some minutes before we bring this show to an end. So, what do you think? What is your take? What is your perspective? What are your thoughts? What, you know, on what we just discussed now. All right. So, what is the price tag Nigeria put on xenophobic violence in South Africa? Good morning and welcome. So, and if you're just joining us, this is Unpacking the Day on Eagle FM, on your favorite number one talk radio stations. And I'm your host, you know, Big Mike, behind the mic. And we need to talk. We need to talk about this, okay? This is something that is shaking up two of Africa's biggest economies, all right? I think something that is shaking up the two of Africa's biggest economy. So Nigeria has put a price tag on xenophobic violence in South Africa. Okay, let me say that in this way. So a price tag, okay? A price tag. Nigeria is essentially telling South Africa, if your people keep attacking our citizens, all right? If your people are if your people are keep, you know, I'm trying to get that Nigerian accent. So yeah, it's saying that the Nigerian essentially telling South African that if your people keep attacking our citizens, we know where it hurts. So we know where it hurts. Not down there, you know. For a man, you know where it hurts. You know where it hurts most. For a business, they are saying, well, you know, your business is here. You have some business in here, in our country. So if you keep attacking our citizens, your business in our country will pay the price. So it will pay the price. That's what, you know, the Nigerians are telling South Africans. So now, this is not just a fight between, you know, Abuja and Pretoria. This is a story about what happens. See, when you look at it in a greater scheme of things, this is a story about what happens when African countries fail to protect their own people. When we fail to protect our own people, when politics meets economics, and when ordinary person, the men on the very street, on the street, you know, get caught up in a crossfire. That's basically what it is. Okay? So what happened? So what exactly happened now? Of course, we know the whole story by now. We don't need to go in detail, really, of what happened in South Africa. But on Monday, July the 27th, Nigerian Minister of State of Foreign Affairs, a man by the name Sola Anikanolaye, well, he sat down in Abuja with a delegation sent by South African President Cyril Ramaphosa. So the delegation was led by South Africa's Minister of International Relationship, Ronald Lamola. So now Ramaphosa did not send Lamola, you know, to Abuja for some kind of a friendly visit. Hey, you know, go there, man, have fun, you know, go and eat kapana. I heard their kapana, that side is it's quite good. Oh, in the street. Oh, you eat best food sometimes in there. All right, so, yeah. No, that was not the case. So he sent him because things are getting hot. Very hot, chilly hot, okay? Now, Nigerians have been attacked like any other African migrant in South Africa. Even killed, you know, and chased out of South Africa communities, chased out of South African communities in the latest wave, in this latest wave of xenophobic violence that just took place in South Africa. At least four people have died in this latest round. We're talking about now, nearly 1,500 Nigerians have had to be evacuated. Okay? And since when you take it back to the one also took xenophobic violence in 2022, Nigeria says 98 of its citizens have been killed in this kind of attacks. So, yeah, thank God that those are Nigerian. Imagine if they are, it's not only Nigerians who died, there are also other But imagine if they were Americans. imagine they were Americans. So we could be dancing a different tune now, okay? Now, here's what made this meeting different, okay? So this meeting is a bit different. The Nigerian minister did not just ask for, you know, for sympathy. He went straight to the wallet. He went straight for the wallet, my dear. You know, it's not just asking for sympathy. He went for the wallet. He said the fact that South African police offer. He said that South African officer. The fact that South African police officer stood. They stood by and watched this attack happen. Because it wasn't, when you look at the news, they were there. It's a fact. They were not doing anything. They were not intervening, you know. So he said that, okay, what we have seen, we've seen South African officers stood by and watched this attack happen, or even seemed to be part of it. So it raises a serious question about whether the South African government is complicit. It's complicit. That's a serious, that's a heavy word. You know, that's a heavy word from the minister. That is complicit. Complicit means you are not just failing to stop something. When you are complicit, you are silently allowing it. Maybe even helping it along. You know, that's what complicit means. And that's what now, and that's the accusation Nigeria is putting on the table. That, well, you were not just, you didn't do anything. You were even seemed to encouraging or being part of it. So, yeah, that's what was going on. So now, and Nigeria made one thing very clear. So they made one thing very clear. They are not saying Nigerians in South Africa are angels. It's not like, okay, our people in your country are angels. They haven't done anything wrong, you know. If a Nigerian commits a crime, they said, well, if a Nigerian committed crimes, yeah, prosecute them, all right? Prosecute as the law requires. Take them to court. Give them a fair trial, okay? But what Nigeria would not accept is mob justice. So they would not accept the mob justice. And it was a mob justice, you know, ordinary people taking the law into their own hands, banning shops, beating people, even killing them. We're talking about four people died. Just because they are foreign. Can you imagine that? We become like, how do you say, we become, and you must listen to Malema, you know, talking about this. He offered a different perspective to what others do. So, and that, my friend, is not justice. You know, that's not justice. That is lawlessness. When you now are taking the law into your own hands, banning shops, beating people, even killing, that's not justice. That's not even justice for you. That's lawlessness. And when lawlessness goes unpunished, it becomes a green light for more violence. Normally, that's the case. If it goes unpunished, it becomes a green light that we can do this again. It does the same thing. So it becomes a green light for more violence. That's why it doesn't stop. It doesn't stop because there's no repercussion. And I always tell you, Follow the money. Follow the money, my friend. So all this is about money. Now, here's where now this story gets me really interested. It gets me interested in this because you might think, okay, Nigeria is angry, South Africa is defensive, but what can Nigeria actually do? Well, the answer is a lot. And it all comes down to Mula, to Naira. It all comes to the Naira. All right? So, let me paint the picture for you, okay? So that you get the picture why this is important. Right now, about 120 South African companies are operating in Nigeria. That's a big number. These are companies, you know, these are not some kind of a corner shop, you know, somewhere. We're talking about companies in strategic sectors. We're talking about telecoms, banking, retail, you name it. It's not some shop, corner shops, you know. But here's the thing. That number in what year? That number used to be, you know, 350. You know, 350. When you're looking at, when you go back to 2010, for example, you know, there were 350 South African companies in Nigeria. Now, there are only 120. So there are only 120, and that's a massive drop. Company like ShopRite, Game, Sasol have already pulled out. Why? The reason was some of it, of course, some of it is just some of it is because of business reasons, not all because of xenophobic. Yes, some is because of business reason, but some of it also because of the diplomatic tension that keep, you know, flaring up whether xenophobic violence hits, you know, the headlines. So, yes, it has that impact to that kind of relationship, to that diplomatic relationship. So, now, let me tell you about the biggest fish in the pond. So, one of the biggest fish in the pond is MTN Nigeria. So, MTN Nigeria, if you ever been to Nigeria, I have been in Lagos, okay? Not for too long, and only once. So, but if you have ever been in Nigeria, you know MTN is everywhere. You know, it is the South African telecom giants, the biggest, so it's one of their biggest market on the planet. So Nigeria is one of their biggest market. Because at the end of 2025, for example, at the end of 2025, MTN Nigeria had 87.3 million subscribers in Nigeria. And that's massive. Yeah? That's a lot. And its revenue, 5.2 trillion naira. Well, don't die on the floor because of the trillion you hear. The naira is but it's still a lot of money. That is about $3.8 billion. Billion, we're talking about US dollar here. That's how big that market is for South Africa. So $3.8 billion from one country. So that tells you how deep South Africa money is embedded in Nigeria. So then you talk about the banking sector as well. So you talk about the bank, you talk about banking, Standard Bank of South Africa control the there's a bank, Stanbic IBTC in Nigeria. So, and that is actually controlled by Standard Bank South Africa. So, which is one of the Nigerian 10 largest banks. So with asset of 8.6 trillion naira, roughly $6.3 billion. So yeah, and of course the bilateral trade between the two countries, you know, it's actually $2.3 billion in 2024. Just in 2024 alone, $2.3 billion. So Nigeria exported nearly $2 billion worth of goods to South Africa, and almost all of that is 96.6% was crude oil. So there is a really a very decent bilateral trade between the two countries, and therefore this was very important to South Africa. So on the other way, South Africa also sent back $380 million worth of product, like polymers, freight vehicles, fruits, you know, electric batteries, chemicals, food products. So there is a good, you know, trade relationship between the two countries. Plus, there are also services and investment and financial flows that the trade number do not even sometimes capture. So the two economies are deeply tied together. So that's why that was very, very, very important, that this meeting was necessary. So when Nigeria say, we could make your business suffer, so they are not making an empty threat. As you can see, they are not really making an empty threat. They are holding a very loaded economic gun. And once they could fire it. And the question we need to actually to ask ourselves is, should economy be used as a weapon in this way? Or should we come to that? Is it right to punish, you know, is it right to punish innocent workers and business because government failed to protect people? I'm just thinking, you know, we're using businesses now. The government, we're using now business, innocent workers and also businesses, actually to punish. We're punishing them because the government have failed to protect people. Is that right? And to be honest, when you think of Nigeria, if MTN, for example, if MTN gets shut down in Nigeria, it's not the South African government that loses the most. They are not the one who's going to lose most. It's actually the Nigerian. You think of the Nigerian workers who loses their job. You think of the Nigerian vendors who sell, you know, the MTN airtime, who loses their income. It is the Nigerian economy that takes a hit. So who really pays when countries start playing economic warfare? It's actually citizens of your own country, of Nigeria. Those are the ones who's going to pay. So, and this is not the first time actually this happened. This is not the first time this happened. Some of you might remember 2019. Remember 2019? That was when, it's 2019 or 2018? 2019. That was when the xenophobic violence in South Africa sparked retaliation in Nigeria as well. So protesters targeted ShopRite stores, MTN facilities, you remember? So both companies had to shut down several site temporarily in Nigeria at that time. So the Nigerian government recalled its ambassador from South Africa. Yeah, it did. Nigeria boycotted the world. There was also a World Economic Forum that was actually being held in Cape Town. So they boycotted it. That was a big deal. The World Economic Forum is where African leaders meet global investors. Nigeria said, we are not showing up. We are not coming, Eh? We are not coming, oh. Yeah, they said they are not coming. And then the Nigerian government also had to urge its own citizen not to attack South African companies, you know, because many of those companies like MTN, ShopRite, employ mostly Nigerian workers, okay? So even in anger, there was a recognition that hurting these businesses hurts ordinary Nigerian than anyone else. So, but here's the lesson from 2019 that we should not forget. Okay? Very good morning. Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Yes, big man. How are you?
I'm fine. And yourself?
I'm all right, my brother.
So how are things?
Everything is fine, man. We're just having a flu.
I can feel that your voice is a bit I feel emotional a little bit.
We are under the weather.
Yeah. Did you travel most of the time? It happens to me when I travel. Sometimes when I move to a different place, you always catch up that little flu or something, yeah.
No, me, I didn't travel because I think maybe because of sometimes these days I'm waking up early.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think it's the one, maybe sometimes you think you are wearing a proper
clothes, but they're not.
What?
If you want to that tra, moko shonda tra mukazosa, ira mote wa.
Mote, I think I supposed to have those. I would have an emotion. And that was kagoni.
Yeah, you see.
I the thing is, Nigeria, I think they are shooting their own foot.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so she. South Africa got nothing to lose.
Yeah.
If you look what in Nigeria they invest in South Africa, it's about church. Nothing else. Ministry of this, ministry of
that. Yeah, that is true. It's actually the churches that invest in South Africa, yeah.
Yeah, there's nothing. So if you look at the South Africa, mostly when it comes to Nigeria,
The oil, South African also get crude oil from Nigeria. That's one of
Nigeria,
the trade, that's the biggest trade between them from actually Nigeria. Yeah.
Yeah, but for me also the way I'm looking at the South African position with Russia, they got nothing to lose. You know the sanction agreement. Well, Nigeria has become a tool for Americans, and everybody know that. They are the one. Really disturbing the African peace. When you are even talking about this Boko Haram, do you think Nigeria cannot really handle the Boko Haram? They can. There's a lot of things that Nigerians are doing which are against the African. That's why most people, they don't prefer Nigerians to be in their country. But it's not only that, but they are even population.
Yeah.
We have those people who cannot behave. It's not a joke. You can look, come to Namibia and look at them at the window north. There are people who are selling all the drugs and whatever, doing all those unnecessary things. Apart from that, the following people is Zimbabwean. I'm telling you, those people, and the way they do with it, they can really kill your economy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think whatever they come up with, South Africa got nothing to lose at all. And now, when I look at what is happening in the situation, let me call you back.
All right. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah. 08-08-333-66-09-1. So what do you think about this this move? Two governments, you know, trying to make an amend. Yeah, they see that there's an escalation. It's not like American Iran. This is still about words. They're still throwing a bullet of words, you know? Yeah. Jump open, man. You know? So, yeah, in Afanatango, Iran and America. So they are still here. We're still using a bullet of word. So as I said, there's a lesson to learn from the 2019 that we shouldn't really forget. So good morning. Welcome to Unpack the Day.
Yes, Michael.
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm fine, and yourself?
Fine. I did not follow you. What is on the table now?
One earlier on, we spoke about we talked about oil and gas, much about oil. That Total Energies has now kind of become a single operator for two license. That's off Mopani and Venice, and I have an issue with that in terms of one operator now taking control of our most discovery, so the, and then we just started talking about the bilateral relationship between South Africa and Nigeria becoming a little bit tense. Nigerians say, look, if you are not doing anything to protect our nationals in your country, we will definitely do something to your business. We will do something to the business, your business in South Africa. I mean, in our country. So, yeah, basically, those are things that we've been discussing. Yeah.
Okay. Let us start with that. Okay. What business does South Africa have in Nigeria?
Well, South Africa have, like, MTN. It's one of the biggest, Nigeria is one of the biggest market for MTN in Nigeria. We have banks, we have retailers, we have there are quite a lot of business in South Africa in Nigeria. Yeah.
Okay, I agree with the previous caller. Now, it means that Nigerians are benefiting from it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, what kind of business that Nigeria have in South Africa, apart from drugs and these fake churches, prophets?
They are the biggest trader. They are the biggest trader when it comes to oil, crude oil, to South Africa.
It's fine, we understand, but we are talking about a normal person's life.
Yeah.
Like in the street, okay, when you talk about MTN, you talk about retail shops, let me say maybe ShopRite and so, it directly employ ordinary people on the ground.
Yeah.
Okay, now, let us leave crude oil and MTN. Let those two giants battle.
Yeah.
Now let us come down to the grassroots. How does South African benefit from Nigerians if not being addicted to drugs? And this scam, this using this church as a scam, these fake churches. Those the people are not fine. Look, when you engage with your neighbor,
yeah,
maybe your kids are fighting and so on. Nigeria is supposed to sit down and they must not be tempted by these individual drug dealers who have been chased from South Africa. South Africa will not. They are also lecturers there, you see, at the universities. They are also people with higher positions in some, businesses or companies.
Yeah.
They are not targeting those people. They are also medical doctors from Nigeria who are operating or working in South Africa. People are talking about these unnecessary drug dealers.
I think at some point, to some extent that's very true, but do you think it has been also taken too far in a way, you know, by South African, by mob group, you know?
No, look, that is the government's failure, you see.
Mm.
Let me give an example here in Namibia. Let us talk with this Ogazemba or Huila kids roaming the street.
Yeah.
The Zimbos roaming the street. You see, that is what the government, where is the immigration laws? You see? Because sometimes for you to prevent unnecessary things, that law should apply, the police, where are the immigration officers?
Yeah.
I remember right after independence, 91, 92, 93, 94, even up to 2000, they can just come and invade, you see, these informal trades to find out who is documented or not. If you don't have valid document, even the government of Nigeria will definitely arrest you, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, and deport you or whatever, you see, policies or what channels they follow, they will deal with you. But if that country is failing, you see, if it is failing, South African government failed just like us here. Now, what do you expect from ordinary citizens?
Yeah. What do you think about this perspective? Now, there is this perspective to say, even in South Africa itself, you have some politician who said, look, you are meant now to these people you are chasing, they are actually suffering, they are actually in the same position. You too, you know, the group that are actually chasing the immigrants, you're actually chasing people who are actually in the same position as you are in their own countries. But there are people who you are working for who actually, you know, make who you are, be where you are, you know, and you're not doing anything to them.
No, let us start like this.
Mm.
Look, Africa, that's why I said we must be robust when we deal with our own issue. Look here, Nigerians got independence before South Africa.
Yeah.
As I told you yesterday, do we really understand what is gaining independence as Africans? Do we really understand? Do we really understood before we engage in this liberation struggle to say, no, let us go and liberate our country to be free? Do we really understand? Do we really understand self-governance? Do we really understand that?
Yeah.
Do we really understand that the own resource like Nigeria, how to utilize it domestically, whatever, to make at least, to benefit the ordinary people?
Mm.
Because once you are independent, let us start from the house itself. When you are young, your father and your parents will control you. But when you become independent, you see, independent meaning that you can govern yourself. You can have your own house, you can go, you have your own wife, you have start your own family. That's you being independent.
Yeah.
Now, with that concept is what should be dealt with. If the neighbor comes or someone, your uncle comes and tells you, no, I'm telling your family, no matter what, it's old and what, old and so on, but still, accommodate your nephews also, you see. Or maybe your son has got his own house, the other one, okay, messed up his life there. Then you say, no. He can say that, no, your kids, you are also old enough. Take care of your kids.
Mm.
You also went to school, you are also working. You are just only focusing on alcohol and whatever you are doing. Now the father comes and says, or the brother says, no. Regardless of what, just accommodate them.
Yeah.
You see? Without telling that one and say, it's true. Pull up your socks, you are also a man, you are old, you are not disabled, you are not what? Please feed your own children. That's what AU should do. You see? AU should come up and say, no, let us deal with this African country which are wasting resources, which is failing to take care of its own people. You see? Nigeria with its exorbitant resources.
Yeah.
People are just suffering like that. No. And we are saying that like some opposition leaders, yes, we are Africans. No. Look here. Let us talk about Chinese now. Let us not beat around the bushes. Chinese or maybe some Europeans.
Yeah.
You see? When they come here, you see? Okay, we cannot just rule them out, maybe drugs or bad. But you will see when they come here what they do. They create projects, isn't it? Although they are taking some resource, then at least people are happy. They are working, they can buy houses, they can afford to do ABCD. That is now on trade level for the government to agree on the trade agreement. But we are talking about ordinary people on the street running from their own country. Angola, Zimbabwe, Malawi, Mozambique, what is this? Tanzania, DRC, Congo. Those are countries like Congo, Nigeria, and Angola. Those are countries which are supposed to sustain Africa.
Yeah.
But look at those countries' citizens, how they are suffering extremely. Now, we want to, at least just to say that, no, it's fine, let them live. Then you are not being, how can I say, being honest with the other one, the leader. You see?
But yeah. Isn't that issues really, we focus, isn't that the, maybe, even the protesters, I understand there's a legitimacy in some of the things that they're asking, but there are bigger issues there. You know, if we say, let's say, for example, we're talking about, they come here, they are the one committing crimes and all that. So would you say that if they leave now, if we kind of like take them out, so the crime will actually, we won't have crime anymore? You know, it's actually a market that is there. It is what is the word that I'm looking for? So it's something that is actually happening already, that they become part of that. So you understand? But there are bigger issues of poverty, bigger issues of inequality, bigger issue of job opportunities. So those are the issues that drive people to this. And of course, foreigners are the targets.
Look, let us just be honest, my brother.
Yeah.
Okay, here in Namibia, let us start here, because sometimes I don't want to use examples somewhere else here in Namibia.
Yeah.
Go even to the farms, communal farmers there in the north. Look at Goze, even the ministers or politicians,
yeah,
who are looking after their cattles. Go around, we are talking about local one, down.
Yeah.
Go in Vinduk, just drive around at those cowash, local cowash. Go in the tax shops and see who are employed there, if not these Angolan foreigners. Because what they do is, you see, it's not them to blame, you see, because the blame for the government to talk, you must deal with this issue yourself.
Yeah.
You see, now that person is supposed to pay a Namibian at least to work in a cowash 1.5. You see what they do? They will rather hire three Angolians to pay them 500 each.
Yeah.
You see now that will frustrate. What have you created? You created a hub of crime, because that person is frustrated. He's supposed to work there, but because of this person who does not have any choice, you see, taking his place, what will he do with that person? You see now?
So eh? you don't want to get actually a 500. So he pays,
yeah,
the one who want to be paid a 500.
That one does not have a choice, and they're taking advantage of those people because of the situation in their country.
Exactly.
Yes. Now, for us to cap that, because if we leave that situation going on like that,
yeah,
what will happen to the ordinary Namibians? They will engage in drugs, in crime, you see, prostitution,
yeah,
early teenage pregnancy, because they don't have anything but, because they understand the living standard in their own country. You see now,
yeah,
no one will work for a 500, not at all.
It's not within your right actually to take law in your hand. That's a government to protect
that,
you. Yeah.
That is what I'm saying.
Okay.
And the government using immigration laws or policies.
Mm.
So the immigration officers must go around, look at these informal sectors, look at the shops where who are employed, look at the mining sector like these contractors,
yeah,
which people are employed, go in these private hospitals. Go in these private pharmacies, private schools. Look, move around. You will find out how many foreigners. You see, even the Chinese. Because what they do is they know that this, let us utilize these people because they don't have any other choice.
Okay. Would that be different? Let's say, for example, these people are here legally. Of course, when they are here, they need to look for work to eat. I mean, they need to feed themselves. Let's say, for example, they are here legally. Would that be different then if they hired these people on a lower age? I mean, on a lower wage?
Still, we go back to the policy. Why should you accommodate 1 million or 500 or 200,000 foreigners, knowing that your population, you can even not deal with it? Why should you do that? Why should you do that? Because you are failing as a government already.
Yeah.
You see? Because in your house, you cannot accommodate 200 guests even in your wedding, knowing that the food which you buy or which you have budgeted for is not enough. Why should you do that? If you want to impress people outside, you will suffer the consequences inside. You see? Those are the things, because you can only allow someone to have that that documentation to make him, if that person's skills are not nowhere to be found here, or you know that he will transfer his skills or his knowledge to the local people. That one you can. You cannot just give a cattle header or someone who is in the street, okay, no, I need legal documents, you give him. For what? You see? For what? Because if you do that, you are creating a problem. This problem is government or leadership problem, not individuals.
Yeah.
You see? If you fail as a leader, that's it. You must take the punch. But the problem is leaders will not deal with that issue because they are the beneficiary of that.
Yeah.
They are the one owning kaiwash. Those working at their farm, at their farms in the north or wherever, are the foreigners. In their tax shop, they employ foreigners. At their salons, they have salons, they employ foreigners. Those who are cleaning their flats or wherever they acquire through this whatever system are foreigners, undocumented, because they know, should they curb that one, it means they will also suffer, or they will also take out, put their hands deep in their pocket to pay ordinary people. They are local Namibian citizens, because that's why they let it go like that. They are the beneficiary of that system. You see? Now, if you ignore that, knowing that, because I employ 7 of them, instead of paying Namibians 1,600, or instead of paying Namibians a required minimum wage of $18 per hour, this foreign, I can even employ 4 of them. You see? Do you think that person will act? They will not act. You see? They won't. So, the same apply to the old system.
We start to see a phenomenon. Even if you, let's say for example, this xenophobic violence, it keep recurring, you know, it keep coming. It's just few 1 or 2 years, and then it's coming again. And we also now trying with the children that are on the street. We may round them up. We may round them up at this time, but they will keep coming. unless the situation actually change in those countries, you understand?
That country and our country, because if immigration, our immigration, I don't know whether they exist or no more. They still exist or no more. You see, that's what I'm telling you. Look, what drove us to go and fight for liberation struggle? Because the former apartheid of the whites, they benefited for this, not slave trade, what do we call it? Forced labor.
Yeah.
You see, because they were beneficiary, that's why they could not allow you to go abroad and fight, or that's why they were against the independence of this country, because they were the beneficiary. You see? That situation came and haunted them back. Because how long have they put up laws, some laws, to say, no, you can, that law which they have benefiting, to say that, okay, they can call 100 people from, 100,000 from Karango, Vambulent, wherever, to come and work. You don't have a choice, because the same applied to these foreigners which they are bringing. It's the same system, but just different, but in different bottles.
Yeah.
You see?
Mm.
Yeah, it's the same wine, but in different bottles.
Mm.
You see? The thing is, they understand, that's why they are reluctant, you see, to deal with this issue. They know that they are benefiting, but they don't want to say, to admit that they are benefiting.
Yeah.
To the whites, it was visible. They said, yes, we are not going to let it go. You will work under this situation, whether you like it or not. But how long have they tried? The people raised up, they tried the borders and so on, because they could not agree to the system and say, okay, let us rectify the system.
Mm.
Now, to us, it is, I'm not saying that it xenophobic will happen. I don't have power to prevent it or to stop it, not even the politician. People will be angry later on.
Yeah.
You see? What they should do is, the earlier the better, let African countries, the leadership, sit and see how they will solve this issue. If they know that, okay, we have let them create this refugee camp still, you see, where maybe they will be assisted by United Nations to feed those people, to say that, okay, we can accommodate this one, like Osiris, send these people to school, then from there they can be utilized in their country, or send them back at the later stage, maybe, you see.
Yeah.
Or whatever you have, if you have that crude oil and you cannot control, fine, me in South Africa or Namibia, we can put them somewhere, give them better education, health and so on, but on a strict, do you understand, movement, action. You see, then once they graduate from the universities and so on, those who can work here can work here. Those whom we can send back, we can send them back to come and work. Maybe they have at least acquired some skill here. You see? But leaving them like that and you say, no, we are one. Why should you not chase a white person? No, that will not help. Let us clean our continent. Let us be real to each other. Let us not use these unnecessary campaigns for you to gain popularity because those foreigners maybe might say, yeah, it's true, let us fund his political party. No, that should cease. Let us just be realistic. Yeah. If we want to obtain or if we want Africa to move forward. Otherwise, we'll be stagnant here until Jesus comes. Maybe he will not come to Africa. Because he could have came here already, seeing this situation. But he declined to say that. No, maybe he came to Europe, that's why.
He was in the middle.
How do those people get hold of that technology? Is it to even to come up with aeroplanes, cell phones, and so on Chinese? Maybe he was there who don't want to tell us. Yeah, he's scared and say, okay, if I put this knowledge to Namibians,
yeah,
what will South Africans be saying? That is the thing. Let us wait. So maybe if we change our behavior.
You know, they said to make a black man poor, put it in the book. They don't read. You know?
They don't read. You see, that is the thing that makes you say, oh, these people, I gave them their own skills.
Yeah.
They tell me to say that it's witchcraft. It's fine. Let us leave them like that. Until, okay, these people left their culture or their belief, which I used to help them, to fly during the night from Ondonga Kingdom to what kingdom, or you see, or from Rundu to Vendu, to go and do their deals. We gave them this, but they misused it. Instead of them modernizing their things to call it technology, they still persist following other people's tradition. Let them be slaves. Let them become the slaves until I come back, maybe, but not to Africa. Maybe we'll be called to go, like the politicians are going into the summit. We will also be the same. Yeah. All Africans go to Europe or wherever to Middle East for judgment. You see? Yeah, those are the things which our leaders should look at. Yeah. Look, a good friend is someone who will face you and tell you the reality. When you are wrong, he will tell you that, my friend, you are wrong. I like such friends.
Yeah.
But those who say, no, you are not wrong, but gossip you on the other side. Is that one a friend? In the AU anyway, is it still in existence, this AU? Even SADC? They don't have the summits. If you hear about summits, it's just abroad. Why can't they sit, engage with locals or whatever, put their mindset together in the same jar and say that, okay, guys, where do we go wrong?
Yeah.
Now, let me say, Ghana.
Even the meeting, there are a lot of meetings that take place, and you never see what comes out of those meetings, you know?
Yesterday, you were talking about this Sora.
Yeah.
And one came in my uncle there, saying that, no, people should go there and listen.
Yeah.
Go there with what? You see now?
Yeah.
Okay, what, did you even inform them that during election, when some people did not have time to vote there in the north, buses ran, you see? To take them from where they are to those destinations to go and vote.
Mm.
What is so difficult? If it's in Rundu, it's okay, one bus from Ururani to Rundu, but you announce it maybe 2 weeks through the headman, traditional authority, to say that, no, who have got idea, or if you want to go and listen, the governor of this region will have a meeting, a SORA meeting, where, please, the buses will travel, so that if the people fail, then you say that, no, but I called you guys,
yeah.
You see, you did not show up, but you come there with a Prado or this Land Cruiser, nice in an aircon, you want someone to utilize his last penny from Kachinakati to Rundu, which is 150-200, just to go and listen to something which does not even make sense.
Yeah.
Is it? It's not how it works. People must start now engaging people on the ground, like leaders. They must start engaging us. But I swear, as the previous caller said, let us see the battle, but I don't think South Africa losing here.
Yeah.
They have nothing to lose.
Yeah,
because if you go there, the people who are crying are Nigerians, ordinary Nigerians. Same apply here also. People who are crying, who will be crying if because go to Nigeria, go to wherever, you will not see Namibians roaming the street.
Yeah.
You see? Why? But we will start, and to us, I'm very sorry, with this attitude of ours. As I used to say, lazy people are always tired. You see?
Yeah. That's
lazy people are always tired. You see, even to read, they are tired.
Yeah.
It means that person who is already always tired, can he lead if he cannot read?
Yeah.
Can you read If you can you lead if you cannot read? You must read first before you say that, okay, I read this document, I don't agree with it, or I agree with it. The next step is ABCD. But you are given a document. I used to look at these leaders when they go abroad. Just check. Just check.
Yeah.
If when they are given those documents, they don't read. It's just done. Thank you. Then they shake hands. But you must see the smile between the host country and the visitors. Just look at the smile. This one's smile will start from the leg. You see? Huh? From the leg until the hair will move.
Yeah.
They say, thank you, God. We have them. This one will just smile and say, okay, no, we agree on this one. And that one knowing that, yes, I told you that those people don't read.
Exactly.
You see? Those are the things. No, no, no. But anyway, you must one day call the minister of Home Affairs and Immigration.
Yeah.
Seriously, we have some questions. Like me, specifically.
Yeah.
Personally, I have some questions. Because that is a ministry which should deal with this issue. First, firstly.
All right.
Before we go to other ministries.
All right.
Okay, sharp.
Thanks for coming through, yeah?
Sharp, sharp.
All right. 3366091. 3366091. So, yeah. So, issues, you know, the root causes. So, the root causes, poverty, unemployment, inequalities, and sometimes then we then scapegoating, you know, of foreigners, you know. So if those issues not addressed, so they in any country that in any country that has to be, and in Africa that's an issue. It's in South Africa, poverty, unemployment, inequality. It's the same thing here. It's the same thing here. So and 7 years later, we are back in the same situation. Same situation. The names are the same as someone, as he was just saying, that's the company are the same, the threat are the same. So you have to ask, what has actually changed? You know, what has changed? Same bottles, I mean, same one, as he said. So what has changed? What has either government done to fix the root of these problems? Neither of the government have done anything, you know? So because if the answer is nothing, then we're just going to come back again here every year, you know? Every few years, it's the same thing. Yeah. All right. So, and the other things, I think the other thing that we need to understand now with Nigeria. Now, let me take you behind the curtain, you know. There is something happening in Nigeria, you know, politics, that is adding fuel to this fire. And you need to understand it. So, Nigeria has a presidential election coming up in 2027. So, and that's not far away. So, and in Nigerian politics, being seen as tough on South Africa, you know, being seen as a defending Nigerian citizen abroad, you know, it is a powerful political tool. You know, you can also see it in that light, that this is being seen as a political tool. They use anything, my dear. So it's a political tool for the upcoming 2027. So in May this year, a Nigerian senator named Adams Shiomole, okay, actually proposed a nationalizing, you know, MTN, nationalizing. So that means Nigerian government would take over MTN's operations in the country. So, and that's a radical move. Absolutely a radical move. Then the Nigerian House of Representatives suggested considering a temporary suspension of payments for South African companies. So, and in July, senators went even further. They suggested using the profit of South African companies to compensate victims
of the xenophobic attacks. So, yeah, none of these proposals have been adopted, of course. So the Nigerian government has so far chosen to, you know, to follow the diplomatic route. So, but here's the thing about politics. When elections are coming, the pressure mounts, you know? So the pressure mounts, the politicians start competing competing to see who can be the toughest, you know, who can be the most patriotic, who can stand up the strongest for the people, you know? And if the xenophobic attacks in South Africa continue, if more Nigerians get killed, the pressure on the Nigerian government, of course, to do something dramatic will become overwhelming. The 2027 election could be the tipping point here. So what looked like and this is what happened in politics. What looked like a restraint today could turn into action tomorrow. So not because it is the right thing to do, but because it is the political expedient, you know, thing to do. So watch out. Watch the space. Watch the space. Now, looking at this, is this really about protecting Nigerian citizens, or is it about politicians scoring points, you know, ahead of the elections? You can also look at that in terms of from the Nigerian point of view. The answer is it's probably both, you know, and that is what makes this so dangerous, you know. That's what it makes so dangerous, because when a human lives and economic stability becomes pawn in a politic game, the ordinary person, the men on the street in Lagos, you know, in Johannesburg, in Windhoek, is the one who suffers the most. Those are the one that suffers most. So, yeah, that's normally the case. Yeah. So, after all the talk, after all the tough talk, what actually happened at the meeting, both sides agreed to tone their rhetoric. Okay? Stop saying things that could inflame tensions. That's what they agree in that meeting. South Africa promised to, you know, prosecute the people responsible for the attacks. Nigeria start compiling compensation claims for property losses. Nigeria also called for an early warning system. Eh? So a way to detect when tensions are rising before they turn into violence. So, yeah, for a stronger police deployment in high-risk areas. A very good morning to you. Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Yeah, Mike, I'm back.
Yeah.
Just a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, Mike, Nedon is correct. When you look at these things which are happening,
yeah,
it's all about partition, which I think they are scoring their card and that they are benefiting out of everything which we are going through.
Mm.
If you look at Namibia, mostly, local people who've been in the usage are for opposition by foreigners.
Yeah.
Whatever we are suffering today as an Namibian is because of opposition. Even now, when we started the show, we are talking about what? Oil. One company buying another company. We have a competition, what do you call this society? Mm. And they feel that it's okay to do that. But if an Namibian will do that, you are going to what? It's a conflict of what? For with the policy. They will not allow you. But the foreigner can do that.
Hmm.
Yeah, because I remember last time, there are so many things I can give you examples. With a Namibian competition, they don't want to allow. When it comes to even finance, if you are involved in like in the bank or insurance.
Yeah.
If you are having insurance, they don't want you to open up a bank. I remember that, if you remember the issue with Tarasco.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. I don't know if you can remember. There was something Tarasco wanted to come up with a bank.
Yeah, no, and, they were actually starting a Tarasco bank, yeah.
Exactly. Well, look, who stopped them?
Yeah.
And now we're having the same thing which are happening at the Samende. Now it's happening in the oil. And everybody feel like it's okay. But some of us, we don't forget whatever you are doing. We can forgive, but never forget. Seriously.
Yeah.
And this is what is happening to the end of our Namibian against Namibia. But a foreigner can get away with it.
Yeah.
I feel it's very, very, it's very bad. Really.
Yeah.
And these things are not supposed to be allowed in our country to happen this time. But remember one thing, that oil and gas was under the president, and these things are happening now with a new appointed minister.
It's not even it's not just it was, it's still actually, still have an upstream petroleum unit there. Yeah.
You see now. Now, you wonder how transparent it will be, because remember, even a lot of people they've been complaining that no, a president cannot do that. It's not in your mandate to do that.
Yeah.
But still, you're holding on. And as a Namibian, we are quiet until things come out of hand. And that's why I'm always tell you that, you know, Namibian, the only complaint is the drought relief not coming next month. Or the pension grant is then cut. Maybe the car is broken or the system is not working.
Do you know there is a culture that we develop. You know, there is a culture that you develop. And, for example, we have developed a culture of, you know, we can complain about something and completely forgot about it.
About it, exactly.
So in 2-3 days, we normalize things, you know, and just let it go. And imagine people who benefit knows that. They learn this kind of cultures.
That's why they know that,
okay, even if you do something, Namibian will just complain, you know,
complain,
for 1 or 2 days.
Tomorrow they are...
and then after that, they forget.
Yeah,
you know?
They forget
they
about it. Which I think is true. That's why our politicians, especially Namibian, they are getting away with it. They know.
Yeah.
We are just good in complaining. Okay. But when it comes to even to take up action, you only find themselves alone.
And I think the other thing is that we want a good life, but we don't want work for it.
Exactly.
That
is our
majority of the whole culture. The Namibian culture is not like the old culture, you know, where we have, you know, our forefathers, they fought, they work hard, they know the dignity of working hard, you know?
Yes.
So that was the case. Yeah.
We want the easy life.
Yeah, but now we want a good life, but we can't work for it.
That's why we see these boys are turning up to be the way where they are today, because they want to drive a GTI without you working hard.
Yeah.
Because you're supposed to sweat for you to have to own that GTI. But they want to get it hard in easy way. But in the long run, that is not the easy way. It's really going to affect you emotionally and physically. And it's what is happening to them today. We have that love of money, I'm telling you, in Namibia. And much of us, we don't pay attention that, you know, for you to, there's a book for what, gain and what, something like that, which I read it like a couple of times, but I'm telling you, there's nothing easy for you to gain it. You have to be push it very hard.
Yeah, no, definitely.
And one thing I think, to conclude, when you look at this between Nigeria and South Africa, I think these are just a politician playing their game. Because I think in Nigeria, they're also going for election anytime.
Yeah.
And if you look at South Africa, it's also the same. And if you look, Ramaphosa, how it is, where he stands, even when that tried, you look also Tinubu, where he is, because there are so many surrounding, especially when it comes to neighboring countries, Niger and the others, they don't like this man.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of Nigerians also, they are not in with in his line. So it's kind of politician, I mean, trying to score cards.
Politicians always have to make those noise, you know. You have
Exactly.
Those in a public arena, you know.
Yeah.
Make yourself look sound, you care, or you tough.
Yeah.
You know. It's an interview. You know, that's an interview for politicians. When you put yourself out there, you're actually being interviewed. You know, you are being seen, you know, he cares much, or he knows what we're going through, and, you know, So, it's a trick. It's an interview for politicians.
Very much.
Yeah.
Anyway, Mike, that's all I want to contribute.
All right, man, thanks for coming through, and thanks for your contribution,
Okay,
ladies and gentlemen, and others. You know, that brings us to the end of unpacking the day. So let's book the time together again tomorrow. It will be the last time. Not the last time. I might come in now and then sometimes. So tomorrow will be my last. I will be the last time I'm hosting the Unpacking the Day. So as I said earlier on, there will be some changes, you know, that are coming your way this coming month. As far as I understand, Unpacking the Day will be in the morning. You know where you have Kuthamosha now. From 6 to 9, I think, that will be Unpacking the Day. So I'm just kind of informing the changes that have been coming. So I won't be hosting that. Tomorrow will be my last, my last hosting the show. So, probably I will say my goodbye tomorrow. So for now, I'm saying goodbye for the day. And until tomorrow, let's make a day. Let's make appointment for tomorrow at the same time from 8 to 11. From me, the Big Mike, have a pleasant day. I'm going to leave you in the hand of beautiful lady, Abigail. It's your time. So thank you and goodbye.